Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hi everybody, this is Larry Jacobs, and welcome to today's edition of K-12 Education Talk Radio, and I am just thrilled to have you here listening to us today, or perhaps on the archives. And if you've never listened to us on the archive, lots of people do, you can always go over to our website, which is www.education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org. Our full schedule is over there. All of our shows are archived over there. In fact, today we're going to do a great show. They're going to be going just a second. Marjorie and Christine are going to be going to the authors of a terrific book called Smarter Charts K-2. And me not being a elementary school teacher, this is going to be a lot of fun for me to learn how to use charts and all that in grades K-2. It's really just great stuff. And they're going to be with us in just a few seconds. This show will be archived over there. Tell your colleagues, your friends, education-talkradio.org. And if you're interested, you can scroll down. You can see all the wonderful press releases we have. You can link over to our Higher Education Talk Radio pages, et cetera. It's really a pretty good site. People like it. We get a lot of nice compliments. Education-talkradio.org. All right, without further ado, I want to bring Christine and Marjorie on, and I can see, I don't know which one's which. Let's find out. Who's at 718?
That could be me. It's Christy.
Christy. Hi, Christy. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Christy Mraz is with us. Hold on there, Marjorie, just a second. Christy is currently a teacher in New York City Public Schools, or as they say it on Long Island, New York City Public Schools. Am I correct?
Exactly.
All right, the YAWK. She was formerly a staff developer with the Teachers College Reading and Writing Project. And Marjorie, are you there, Marjorie?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Hi, Marjorie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
That's good. And you are currently a staff developer at the Teachers College Reading and Writing Project located in New York City. When you're not doing that, you wrote a wonderful book for Heinemann Publishing called Smarter Charts K-2. And I wish you could see me because I have this big smile on my face. Okay. And I like the picture of you two on the cover. Smarter Charts K-2, Heinemann Publishing. That's H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, Heinemann.com. Go over there, Smarter Charts K-2. It's not only cute, and I assume this is you, Christy, and Marjorie here on the cover. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Yeah.
Those are our self-portraits.
You're wearing purple and orange. You look beautiful.
Well, I'm covered in purple, orange right now, as happens in the day of a kindergarten teacher.
are you a kindergarten teacher?
I am a kindergarten teacher right now, yes.
I was going to ask you, we're going to talk about all this. The subtitle of the book, because it's not just charts. Look, and I love this. It's Optimizing an Instructional Staple, i.e. charts, to create independent readers and writers. Okay, which, as you know, Common Core is one of the more important things. Everybody's leading towards literacy. The foundation is so important. Everybody's talking about the best way to do it. And I have to tell you, okay, using charts to do that is really simple. But me not being an elementary school teacher, I don't know how to do it. Okay, so we're going to find out how to do it. But first of all, I want to ask you both a question, okay? You met at the Teachers College Reading and Writing Project, right?
That is correct,
yes.
Okay, one of you, whichever one, tell us what that is, just so we can get a feel for how you folks met.
The Teachers College Reading and Writing Project, it was started with by Lucy Calkins many years ago to bring in, you know, to teach reading and writing in classrooms. She started out with the writing and then moved into reading as well. So our goal is to bring what real writers and readers do out in the world to children.
I was going to say it's primarily a staff development / think tank organization. So we meet together, study things in reading and writing, and then we bring that back out to schools and then come back from work in schools to the project to do more thinking. And we specialize usually between kindergarten and second grade and then third through eighth grade.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And do you both go out, Marjorie and Christy, do you go out and actually do this? Do you actually do this workshops?
Yes. I work every day in a school with teachers directly with children.
And that's what I was doing formerly in my before I retired from that and came back to being a full-time classroom teacher.
Wow, and that's Christy talking then.
Yes, Christy Kindergarten.
What grade did you teach, Marjorie?
I taught first and second.
I don't know how you guys do it. I taught social studies in junior high school when there were junior high schools. And, I don't know how elementary schools I just have never figured out how you guys do it. You're like saints as far as I'm concerned.
I think we say the same thing about everyone teaching those middle grades.
Yeah, but we're allowed to lose our temper. You guys never lose your temper for me.
It's true.
Right? It's just great. Now you wrote the book, Smarter Charts, K2, again, Heinemann Publishing, Smarter Charts, K2, all right? And it's using charts, okay, to create independent readers and writers. So let's talk about this. Every teacher uses charts in their classroom. And I want you to define a chart so people don't think we're talking about a bar graph or something. And then I want you to... Why are the kinds of charts you talk about in your book, Smarter Charts, different, okay, from the standard? And who should we start with, Marjorie or Christy?
I'm gonna start, and then Marjorie's going to pick up from where I leave off, if that's all right. That's
go ahead,
Christy. Okay. So, when we're thinking about a chart, we're thinking about usually, a large piece of paper that's recording some kind of information that's been taught in the classroom so kids can reference it again and again. So mm-hmm. we talk about in our book that there are different types of charts for different purposes. So we talk about routine charts, which can range from how to get ready for writing workshop to how to leave during a fire drill. We talk mm-hmm. about process charts, which break down some complex skills into process steps. So like the writing process, you know, that first you get an idea, you plan it, you write it, you go back to it again. We talk about strategy charts, or what we sort of think of as menu charts, which is taking a big skill, something like envisioning, and giving different strategies, teaching different strategies and recording different strategies to achieve that. We also talk about exemplar charts, which show like a teacher piece of writing or a student piece of writing marked up with highlighters and things like that to show children what types of elements they'll want to have in their own writing. And last but not least, we talk about genre charts, which are content charts for children. So, for example, in kindergarten, we're about to start writing like scientists. So we're going to kind of develop a genre chart together about what does scientific writing really look like.
Huh. Marjorie, you want to
continue? Yeah, and in each of these cases, whatever it is we're teaching, we're also creating these charts with specific children in mind. Right? Like, in other words, we're not thinking about, you know, the chart first and then the kids. We're thinking about the kids first. Like, in the book, we talk about how
That's actually a very good point.
Yeah, we talk
like
about
not
putting the chart before the horse sort of thing.
hey, it's my show. I make the jokes. Okay?
Oh, sorry.
So, the chart. Before it writing that down for the next one. Okay.
It's interesting because coming back into the classroom this year, after having worked at the project, I have a lot of content knowledge about what kindergarten readers and kindergarten writers need to know. And so there was this instinct in me to be like, start making stuff now, because once the school year starts rolling, you're gonna want to have things on the ready. And so I wanted to make a chart, you know, about things that stories have in them. And it was so funny because the first day of writing workshop, that chart was already useless to me, because when I looked at their writing, I was like, oh, they need this, this, and this, and I had thought they would need that, that, and that. So we're really talking about making charts that are tailor-made to the class in front of you, not, as Marjorie said, putting the chart before the horse.
Right. Did you put that joke in the book?
Oh, of course.
Did you think about naming the book then?
You know, we hadn't, but that will be our follow up album.
I think that was. Now that we've written the first book, we've learned you don't put the chart before the course.
There you go.
It's not bad, actually. Before the horse, it's actually pretty clever. I got to tell you, you know. But you guys, you are the chart chums. You have a blog, okay, which I'm actually had open a minute ago. All of a sudden, I can't find it. It's chartchums.wordpress.com, right? Chartchums. www.thinktankorganization.wordpress.com. Okay.
And not so chart chums, because people have asked us that.
Chart chums, C-H-U-M-S, Marjorie and Christy. Okay, and how often, this is a question that came to mind as I was looking through everything. How often do you use charts? Because if you use them for, you are the queens of charts. That's like Alice in Wonderland, the queen of charts.
Yes, it's so
okay.
true.
Right, so the queen of charts, okay, and you know your stuff. Okay, and you know how to use them. We're going to talk about how to use them. But my question is, how often do you use them? Because like anything, if it's around all the time, you get used to it. And it becomes commonplace. And you're like, I used the example on a show earlier today. It's the Liberty Bell. Okay, I lived in Philadelphia all my life. I think I finally got to the Liberty Bell when I was 17. Because it was there. It was simple. You take it for granted.
Right.
You know? So how often do you use a chart?
Well, the chart is only as useful as often as you use it. So the more you use it, the more useful it'll be. So I think that's a key thing about using charts is that we keep them up for as long as they're being used, and then when they're no longer being used, if we see they're no longer being used, we either pay attention to them, like the Liberty Bell. You have to like bring your eyes back to it and revisit
it. Exactly.
Or you retire it, you put it away, it's not needed anymore.
And would you use it again next year? Possibly.
We tend not to use charts from year to year. The concepts, perhaps.
Okay.
But, you know, we suggest teachers take photographs of their charts and put them with their curriculum as a reminder. Like Christy said earlier, every class is different. You know,
and
they need slightly different things.
Ahead,
and since, I'm sorry, one of the things I was going to say is since one of the things we're working on constantly is tailoring our charts to our students, you know, I make the joke that kids are just small people. It's this amazing thing, and they pay attention to things that are about them the same way we do. You want to have things like photographs of children on the charts, the student work of the actual children on the charts, so that it's both using the class you have currently and supporting the class you have currently. And I don't think anything would be more of a bummer than unrolling a chart for a group of kids and then being like, that's my brother. He's 14 now.
You're absolutely right, for goodness sake. I don't understand how you two came up with this idea. I mean, charts have been around for years, okay? But to use them and to use them, to inspire creativity and independence and thought for reading and writing is something different. So where'd the idea come from? Marjorie, I'm going to pop it over to you.
Oh, well, actually, it came about because Christy and I both are very sort of visual people. And
okay. And
whenever we tried to take a complex idea or concept, we would always kind of like doodle it and work it out on paper to simplify it so that we could understand it. And then when
Christy,
I
read your biography. It said you like to doodle all the time.
it's true.
Right. Right.
It's, okay. She's got great doodles. Really. And we would present workshops to teachers, you know, to rooms full of teachers, and as a way to help explaining these concept ideas, we would show teachers how we did it with children, and we would put examples of our charts. And then at the end of the workshop, people didn't want to come and talk to us. They just wanted to take pictures of our charts.
Bingo.
Right? Yeah.
And you began to realize, if I may, okay, that this was something that really needed to be shared with a lot more people.
Yeah. We thought it was something that was fairly straightforward, but we found out that teachers really had a lot of questions about them.
I have to ask, whichever one of you again wants to ask, elementary school teachers in particular, if I may, maybe lower middle school, you know what I mean, use charts more than, say, the disciplines in high school, et cetera, et cetera. Am I right on that? I think I am.
I think it depends on classrooms. I think effective classrooms everywhere, though, have a record of teaching for children to refer back to. And I think that's the part, when I think about how we got interested in charts, it was in my own classroom trying to help kids become independent of me. And so I found that the things that I had saved and put up, instead of just erasing off the dry erase board or scribbling and then having it on a flip chart, the things that I actually put up, kids were more likely to do and less likely to ask me about, especially if I referred back to it. So I think really solid teachers across the board use visual aids and then keep those up to prompt learning. We say in our book, you know, we stole a lot of what we use in charts from what advertising does. And advertising knows that, you know, your visual memory is incredibly strong. And
right.
So we're pulling on the same part of your brain that a really effective ad does.
And, you know, I always say if you want to find out if an ad is effective, turn off the sound and see if you can figure out what the product is.
And that's a great idea for a chart, too. Take the words away and see, do you know, can you tell what it's teaching?
I do get royalties, don't I? I know the folks that
I'm writing you a check right now, Larry.
Margie, our guest today, let me reintroduce you. Margie Martinelli and Christine Mirage wrote an adorable book called a good book, not just adorable, but to me, I'm looking at the cover here, it's cute. Okay, Smarter Charts K2, Optimizing an Instructional Staple to Create Independent Readers and Writers. Okay, and I have to ask you, and I'm going to ask Christy this time. Christy, this is an age of technology. Everybody's talking about whiteboards. Everybody's talking about iPads, and where you put your finger on it and you create a chart and all the graph and all that sort of stuff. But you seem to be this is an old-fashioned method.
it's so interesting, Larry, because. I was out of the classroom when smart boards started to come into classrooms, and initially I just taped my paper over the smart board. So since I've been back in the classroom, I've actually learned to use the smart board as a tool that's useful. One of the things that the smart board is and technology is incredibly useful for is instant gratification, instant visual imagery. So when we were working on what it might look like for kindergartners to really be focused on their writing, I snapped a picture of the class, put it right up, mm-hmm. connected I took it on my phone, connected my phone to the document camera and showed the picture on the smart board to everyone that this is what a kindergarten class hard at work looks like. Then step two, because I need the smart board for something else, is then I transferred that to an actual chart that can stay up. The smart board, just like all sort of technologies, you don't keep it. It's constantly changing. I use it for a million different things, but some things I need to be stationary for children so they can find them again and again. So I think the chart board is a great way to create charts with children, show them instantly what you're talking about, and then sort of freeze frame it and save it to the side so that kids can reference it even if it's no longer on the smart board.
Now, I suppose that there's an elementary school teacher out there who can't draw very well or is just not good, not that good in art. I don't know how to say that. help me with that, ladies. But I'll swing back to Marjorie, okay, one of the co-authors of the Smarter Charts K2, Marjorie Martinelli. I'm a teacher, and I can't draw very well, but the charts are still extremely important. So what happens then? How do you make great charts if you can't draw?
Well, if you can't draw.
Go on,
well.
Marjorie. Good luck with that question.
Well, that's one of the most popular things we teach teachers at one of our workshops is how to draw. And, in fact, on our blog, we put in some step-by-step instructions for,
really?
You know, yeah, it's called, like, Let's Talk About Drawing and Let's Talk Some More About Drawing. And it's also in the book as well. But the ability to draw, really, it just comes from being able to see the world in shapes and then practicing some of that eye-hand coordination. I mean, and it's so we basically can teach anyone to draw. And it's also good for children to see, especially young children. There's a lot of children coming into classrooms nowadays who have not really had a lot of opportunities to have crayon to paper, you know, before coming to school. And so they're often afraid to draw. So by teaching teachers, the teachers can then teach their children.
And let me make the natural segue there to like ELL, ESL students. You teach in New York City, Christy,
mm-hmm.
okay, which as we know is extremely diverse in terms of its ethnicity of of its students. I don't know about your particular classroom, but I would imagine the charts work very well in an ESL, ELL challenged classroom.
Oh, incredibly well. It's actually almost a lifesaver for me because and for teachers across the country, because one of the things we can do is take photographs, like not just drawing class, but photographs or student works or symbols that everybody knows. I mean, it's almost a universal symbol, that red circle with a line across it as don't do that, or like a, you know, a plus sign. Or
wait a minute, that's what that means?
Oh, no. But it's, yeah, or even just the use of color, green and red. That you can, using those, you can sort of access some of kids' symbol and visual literacy. I know that when I was in, I've done some work in a school in Taiwan, the Taipei American School, and I can't read the characters, but I could do just fine getting around because of the visuals. And so we kind of use that same idea. But one of the things that's true is like a bathroom sign looks like a bathroom sign everywhere. So on charts, we try to keep similar ideas with the same visual.
That's pretty good. That's a good answer. I love that one. That was great. Talk to me about how the charts, and this is part of your subtitle of the book, which is Optimizing an Instructional Staple to Create Independent Readers and Writers. How does it create, and either one of you again can answer, how does a chart help to create an independent reader or writer? Marjorie?
Well, it gives them the visual reminders of what they've been taught, you know. So, like, for example, if they've, you know, forgotten something or a step in the process, they, instead of going to the teacher, they can look up at the chart, you know, and they've been taught to use the chart as a problem-solving tool, and that it's there for them for a reason. You know, one little girl once looked up at the chart. The teacher said, "Why don't you look at the chart?" And she looks up there, and she's like, "It looks like you're giving away all the answers." You know, so kids, you know, it's like that idea, like, oh yeah, those, that does have some answers up there for you. It's a useful tool.
And
good, Christy, good.
I was just going to say, you know, one of the big parts of kindergarten, we're like 20 days in right now, and we're working on a lot of independence. And I wear a hat when I'm conferring or working one-on-one or in small groups that's got a little visual icon that says, you know, that lets them know I'm busy. And there's a matching chart that also shows that same icon. So if I've got that hat on and kids see I'm busy, then they know they can use that chart to help them sort through some issues. So
give me an example. Can you explain that a little further?
So, okay, so I'm wearing a very stylish hat that has a red side, because red, they know very well that red means stop, and it's got a little arrow pointing to a square for the chart. And so that's on the chart has the same picture, same red on it, and then on it are three green bullets of ways that kids can help themselves. So you can't come to the teacher, but one green bullet is you can try your best. Another green bullet is you can whisper to a buddy. And the third green bullet is save it till later. And so I've taught them these things, we've practiced these things, and now we're getting to the point where when they say, I'm wearing that hat, then those are the three things that they can do to keep themselves working.
And, you know, this is going to sound silly, and it's obvious, but I'll just put it into perspective as I'm learning this, as I'm talking to you. You know, we're in a digital age, and we talk about, I've been talking about it on a couple of shows this week and last, the digital divide, where somehow education by zip code, if you live in the rich suburbs, you're going to have the iPad, and in other school districts, you obviously do not. But a lot of the work in K-2, technologically speaking, is very visual. And I just want to say that what you're doing, which is, I think, incredibly important in all seriousness, is you're kind of lessening that digital divide. You may not be digital per se, okay, but you're using the visuals, and you're making it a smart and good teacher, okay, can use the visuals like you're doing with the charts to really make a difference in their classroom, regardless of the state of the technology of the classroom. And I think that's something that needs to be said, because what you're doing is really important for a lot of people and a lot of teachers these days across the whole country, not just New York City, but little small towns all over the place that are facing real budget problems, et cetera. This is a way to get those points across early when the kids are young, and hopefully later they'll be able to tap into all the technology, et cetera.
You know, Larry, that's a great point for two reasons. One is that, you know, we actually steal a little bit from kids' digital literacy on our charts. We use the play sign and we use the pause sign. So, as simple as walking in the line, you're on play. When I need you to stop, I put you on pause. And also, we sometimes joke, Marjorie and I, that charts are the Google of your, you're like the search, you know, of your classroom, that you're Google. You're like, well, here are some places you can find that information. But, you know, instead of being a content provider all the time, you're also teaching kids, like Marjorie said, there are ways for you to find this information out. And these charts are ways for you to do that on your own, which is exactly what we teach kids to do when they're using search engines for the first time.
It's really, really cool stuff. Again, Christy Meraz and Marjorie Martinelli wrote Smarter Charts K2, and I haven't mentioned it in a while. They also have a great blog. It's cute. www.chartchums.wordpress.com. You can go over there and check it out. Not chart chumps, okay?
Right. Nor chartums.
Now,
or
chum
is in
this.
Maine.
Because people are going to be thinking, okay, you're not selling charts. Or maybe you are. Are you selling charts?
We're selling what's better than charts, the way make them yourself.
Thank you. And that was my point, okay? There's not the Margie and Christy store of charts.
No.
Okay? But charts are available. Pre-made charts for K-2 classrooms are available. But I want you to go over this again because we talked about it at the beginning. Okay, why is it important for people to understand that they should do their own charts rather than just simply buy charts?
I can start this one, and then Marjorie can take it.
Okay,
I think that I'm going to draw an analogy to clothing. So when my sister got married, I was fortunate to have a dress made for me, which was absolutely stunning, and I realized I should throw all my other clothes out.
Were you the maid of honor?
The maid of honor.
There you go.
Yeah, and what was so interesting is I was thinking about the analogy of buying something off the rack, in which case, you know, maybe you don't totally love the color, maybe you have to go get it hemmed, or maybe you have to make some sort of change to it, versus something tailor-made for you and your desires. And I think when we talk about charts, we think about the same thing. It's the idea that you could buy something off the rack, but is it really what you want? Is it really speaking to your kids? Is it really speaking to your needs? Versus the idea of something made from scratch for you.
Good answer. I like that. Okay, and you said it at the beginning of our program today. You said that you make your charts for the kids involved. It's not a quote a generic chart,
right?
No,
right.
You know, and it's some. And I know it's for me. It's been a long time since I was in teacher education at college. But are charts? Help me out here, because are charts part of the teacher training at all for elementary school teachers? You know,
I think they're expected. I think that's the interesting thing.
Yeah,
I think charts are something that are expected that teachers make because they're, again, it's supposed to be a record of your instruction. And then, of course, with all the, you know, talk about doing things in multiple modalities and stuff, you need to think about that whenever you're presenting information. But how you actually condense the complex ideas into really simple steps
things
is very difficult, actually, for a lot of teachers. So it takes more practice. So that's what we've been trying to do.
That's why we have section one in our book, which covers that in great detail, Larry.
What, talk to me about section one of the book. Go ahead, Christy.
Well, in section one in our book, we kind of tackle two probably of the biggest questions we ever hear from teachers, which is, what do I write on a chart? And also, I don't know how to draw. So we talked a little bit about the drawing, but the what do I write on my chart is often challenging because when we teach, there's a lot of words coming out of our mouth, and it is not going to help anyone to have all those words on the chart. It would just turn kids off. And oftentimes, like I'm a kindergarten teacher, some of my kids are reading simple sentences. Some aren't reading at all. I can't write everything I'm saying for children.
Right.
So we talk a lot about when you're teaching something, let's say, for example, acting out your story to help you get a better picture in your mind. We talk about how that's going with like teaching. So you're going to have a big catchy heading like, you know, like get to know your story. And one of the bullets underneath might be act it out. Now, I might be teaching lots of other things like decide who's going to be the character, try to match your voice and your facial expression. But all my bullet might say is act it out because I'm considering the reading level of my children. I'm considering how much visual print they can handle. And the other half of that complex idea is going to be represented in the pictures, whether it be something I'm sketching or a photograph I'm taking.
Wow. I have to tell me something here. I'm reading about section two. I'm on the internet. I'm on your Heinemann site. And it says musical moments using music, chanting, and rhyme can make anything memorable. My question is, how do you get music? Talk to me about putting sound to the chart. I don't know how else to ask this.
Well, it's like there again, it kind of comes back to advertising, the world of advertising. And if you put a jingle to something, if you put a rhythm and a beat to it, it's going to be memorable. So on a most basic level, if you reread a chart and you clap it and you snap it, it's going to be more memorable than
you
just
mean like create a little
it.
Beat to it?
Yeah,
like
so
beat.
Then a lot of times we'll create like a chart that does have like words that kind of sort of rhyme or definitely has a beat or we'll repeat certain lines or we'll have a jingle that will kind of go alongside of a chart to make it more memorable.
Marjorie, I can give a quick example.
Excuse me. Can I have a little example of that? Please?
Yes.
Oh, yes. So we have a chart
Christy?
In our kindergarten classroom that one of the most favorite things is to say, I'm done, right? So we're trying to oust that word from our vocabulary. So the title of our chart is, When You're Done, It's Time for Fun. And then there's like three little things that kids can do that are the fun thing, which when they're with their books, it means they can sing their book, act out their book, or be a teacher. But it's a very quick, if they say, if they're like, I'm done, all I have to do is say, when you're done, and they say, time for fun, and it helps them recall what the rest of that is.
That's pretty cool, I got to tell you. All right, now I got to ask you this. Christy, you're teaching now kindergarten in New York City.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So and I assume, I would assume you're using charts quite a bit.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. That was just a logical assumption on my
None,
part.
Larry. My walls are blank.
Yeah, of course. There's nothing there. What are you talking about? Well, they say the tailor has the baggiest pants and all that sort of stuff. Okay. But at any rate, all right, so you're teaching, and I'm sure your room is terrific. Okay, your classroom's terrific. Are the other teachers coming in and taking advantage of this expertise of yours?
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, one of the best things to do is to talk this out with other teachers on the grade. I'm so lucky to have an incredible team that I work with, so smart, so brilliant, so thoughtful, that we were actually just having a conversation at a grade planning where we're trying to teach kids the process of inquiry, how you get an idea, you notice things, you ask questions, you grow a theory. And the conversation we were having is, what are the visual icons we can use in the chart that will help represent the idea? And, you know, I can contribute in that conversation, and teachers are also, you know, we're having, it's a great opportunity to bounce ideas off. Is that enough? Is that too many words? Do you feel like that icon represents that well? And we, you know, one of the teachers suggested the idea that, like, you know, we could match this icon to another thing in the room. And so they are taking advantage, but I'm also taking advantage of, you know, five other really smart minds around me.
I think it's great. And I have a question. Marjorie, I want you to answer this question. All right?
Yes.
You have K-2. And again, I'm not an elementary school teacher. But obviously your ideas are good for, obviously, pre-K, okay, I would think.
Yes.
Correct
yeah.
me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think they're good through, wouldn't they be good through fifth or sixth grade or something? Why K-2? Help me here.
Yeah, well, that, I think that
I
was...
I want to expand your audience, girls. I want to expand this, ladies.
Thank you.
From K-2 to, like, pre-K-7 or something.
Yeah, well, it can definitely do pre-K. And actually, quite a few of our upper-grade colleagues have been using the book quite successfully with their 3 to 8 teachers. So they find
Thank
that the foundations underneath it are really valid. I think the reason it's... K-2 is probably because that was considered our area of expertise at the time, and that a lot of our examples, you know, were coming out of kindergarten, first grade, and second grade classrooms. But no, we're definitely looking at how to make those charts work for older children as well, in helping teachers in upper grade classrooms.
I would think they would, because the same challenges exist in the upper classroom, because not every kid comes through the same school. Kids pop in and out from different schools, different school districts, et cetera, different language groups, different whatevers. Okay? And I would think you're – yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like we've had a lot – it's interesting the amount of people who have contacted us through our blogs or in other ways who are upper grade teachers who are finding a lot of use out of it. So I think you're very right, Larry, that – it is a book that sort of outgrows its frame of people that it says cater to, but really, you're right, it has a much broader range that it could apply to.
You have to come out with a new edition of K-2 and be sure to get our K-3-7 and make it the same book.
Yeah. I like the way you think, Larry. Let's get on that.
It's the simplest way, I'll tell you, for goodness sakes. But as we're winding down here, I just want to tell everybody, okay, Christine Meraz, Christy, and Marjorie Martinelli are the authors of Smarter Charts, which is published by Heinemann Publishing. Now, it's Smarter Charts K-2, but believe me, what's in the book is good pre-K through infinity, so to speak. probably good through community college, I might add. Why not? You know,
that's true.
It's true. They face the same challenges. This can be used for any level of education, and it's going to make people independent and more creative about it, and the teachers are going to get a real charge, which is something we didn't even talk about, the fun of making the charts, for goodness sakes.
And you can make them at home. Help your family.
Exactly. And you can actually do it without asking your kid how to create the chart on your iPad.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it. Yeah, so you don't have to embarrass yourself, for goodness sakes. Okay, the Smarter Charts, okay, K-2, Heinemann Publishing. The ladies are known as the Chart Chums. That's C-H-R-T-C-H-U-M-S, okay, and they have a great little blog, www.chartchums.wordpress.com. If you want to learn more, go over there or go. Actually, that's the best place to go. Chartchums.wordpress.com. And of course, you can go to Heinemann Publishing and look up Smarter Charts K2, and you'll see Marjorie and Christine and all about the stuff over there. Any last words, ladies, as we wind down? This was great. I love this conversation. This was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for having us, Larry. And we'll give some last advice. From the kindergarten standpoint, my advice to all teachers out there is less is more.
And definitely. And just to keep the charts active and alive, just touch them, talk about them, read them, often revise them.
And I think from Marjorie and I, happy charting out there.
Wow, very good. That's from the Queens of Charts. That's your next
Thank
book.
Thank you, Larry.
That's the next. The Queen of Charts. Got it?
Okay, got it.
Perfect.
All right. Thank you, ladies. You were great. I knew you would be, and you were.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let me say it again. Marjorie Martinelli and Christine Meraz, that's M-R-A-Z, by the way, are the authors of Smarter Charts. Okay, it's labeled K-2, but believe me, it goes beyond either way. Okay, Smarter Charts K-2. I have a Heinemann book, and you can learn more, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, Heinemann.com. Go over there. They got a million books over there, and we're talking to just these authors today, but they have great books in every area. We've interviewed a number of their authors here on the show. You can also check out Marjorie and Christine's blog, which is chartchums.wordpress.com. Thank you, Eric and Chuck over at Heinemann, for helping me find these wonderful ladies. And thank you, ladies, for taking time out of your busy day in New York City to be with us. I think you gave a lot of great information to a lot of people today, so we appreciate it. This show is going to be archived over at at education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org, which is our K-12 website. Over there, you can link over to Higher Education Talk Radio. Check it out. It's good stuff, and we appreciate Chrissy and Marjorie coming over today. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.